welcome to Souls on Fire with your host, Joe Trainer. Joe is a husband and father of three, and for 29 years was an award-winning and very successful college football coach. Today, he is the director of athletics for Pope John Paul II High School. He is a leader, a man of character, and filled with the joy of the Lord. Joe was running for God's heart and became a soul on fire. Listen in every Monday as Joe interviews other sports figures and businessmen and women who bring their faith into the marketplace. And now, here's Joe Trainer.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Souls on Fire. I'm your host, Joe Trainer. For the next hour, I'll be joined by Pete DeMaio, one of the most successful insurance agents in the state, in the tri-state area. And more than that, he's one of the most in-demand speakers for youth groups and Catholic schools across the entire tri-state area. He's got an amazing story to tell. Pete, welcome to the show.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
Doing really well, thanks.
Awesome. Listen, before we begin, as we always start the hour off on Mondays, let's start off with a quick prayer. So, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Heavenly Father, as Pete and I gather for the next hour in faith and fellowship, we ask that our thoughts be your thoughts, that our words be your words, and that our deeds be your deeds. We ask this in your name, amen. Like I said, Pete DeMaio has his own Allstate insurance agency. He's been regarded for the last 3 years as an award-winning agency. He's been recognized as the best agency in the state of Pennsylvania, 3 years running. He's happily married to his high school sweetheart. They were blessed with seven beautiful children. So they're doing God's work in that aspect as well. Four beautiful boys and three girls. And we are just couldn't be more excited to have him on the show. The subject today is really called Living the Gospel of Life, and it's really a theme that Pete talks about. He speaks to so many groups throughout the year, youth groups, CCD groups, Catholic schools. He's been out here at BJP before I got here. He was at Lansdale Catholic. He's an incredible, dynamic speaker. He's a devout Catholic and disciple of Christ, and really excited about having him here for the next hour because his story is incredibly inspiring. So, Pete, as we get going here, talk to the audience about, your upbringing. Obviously, a tri-state guy, a Jersey guy. I never asked you this before, but I have to. Are you an Eagles-Phillies guy? Are you a Giants-Mets guy? What do you got there?
You put me on the spot. North Jersey usually goes Giants, Mets, and South Jersey usually goes Philly. So I would be Philly. However, my mom and dad and my older brothers lived out in Pittsburgh in the 70s during the heyday. So we actually grew up as hardcore Steelers and Pirates fans.
Okay. Well, that's the Pirates we can issue with because it's in the same division, but Steelers, I'm okay with it, so.
I didn't mean to disappoint. Sorry.
No problem. Why don't we start out just talking about your upbringing, growing up just outside of Atlantic City and Ventnor, and kind of talk about your family and your early experiences in the faith.
No problem. Yeah, Joe, number one, thank you so much for having me on. Honestly, it's an honor for me just to be on with you. So I really do appreciate that. And all the things that you said about me, I don't even think about any of those things, so I don't know if I can live up to all that.
Sure.
Looking forward to a great conversation with you over the next hour, and it's going to be wonderful. But thank you, Joe, because I don't deserve all that praise. But thank you. So
you got it.
Just a regular guy. I grew up, we're Jersey, you know, people, and I grew up down the shore. My mom and dad are just regular poor Atlantic City kids. They met when they were 14, 15 years old, started dating, which I think is cool because it actually gave life to the idea that when I met Trisha, my wife, when we were in high school, that this actually could be the one when we were 15 years old and fell in love and that we could turn out, you know, with a story like my mom and dad. And it's really, you know, I'm kind of an old soul, so if I could go back to any time period, I'd probably go back to the 1950s and around that time and just listening, you know, watching movies like The Bronx Tale and stuff and listening to my parents describe Atlantic City and the way it was when they were growing up and Steel Pier and the boardwalk and how you had to be dressed just to go on the boardwalk and, you know, just that time. And, you know, they said when they were kids, they'd walk down the boardwalk holding hands. And they said, do you think someday we'll ever be able to live, you know, here in Ventnor? I guess they viewed that as being, you know, the wealthier, rich area. Sure. And they did. They bought a house there, and that's where we were raised. So it was, you know, mostly me. I'm the youngest of four boys. So I was raised there and didn't come up to this area until college. So,
awesome. Attended St. Augustine Prep. How was that experience for you? Obviously, that's a private Catholic school. How was that experience for you?
It was interesting. Yeah. You know, we obviously being Catholic, we talk about formation and being, you know, well formed and, you know, and so growing up down at the shore was a great place to grow up. And my brother Chris and I were like two of the only kids from down the shore that got sent out to St. Augustine Prep at the time. And I think that my parents, you know, raised our older two brothers, and then there was a little gap between us, and they just wanted the absolute best for us. So rather than sending us to, and there's not, you know, nothing wrong, obviously, with any school we go to. You just, you know, whatever's there, wherever you find yourself, you do the best that you can. Rather than send us to Atlantic City High School or to Holy Spirit High School, they actually sent us out there, which was which was a little weird for my brother and I. But honestly, they made the right call because St. Augustine Prep is such a great place. It's Augustinian priest. It's, you know, single-sex education and the education there was wonderful. The athletics there were wonderful. We had, you know, great group of boys that were there, young men. You know, it was a great place. Really, really. You got anyone who's been to that type of environment. There's many schools up here that are like that, but you really do have a brotherhood there that, you know, that stays, you know, for a lifetime. So yeah, great school.
And then where did Trish go to school? Pete,
my brother Chris.
No, Trisha, your wife.
Oh, Trisha was actually at Sacred Heart High School in Vineland, and you had mentioned, you know, athletics, Joe, and that's why I was looking forward to coming on with you, just because of your life and your, you know, career and track record. And I was a good athlete. I was one of the best, or better, I should say, better basketball and baseball players, you know, down in the you know, shore of South Jersey area. And I wound up transferring high schools, actually, my sophomore year of high school. And I thought I was transferring for sports. I went to Sacred Heart High School in Vineland, New Jersey, and little did I know, God was introducing me to my, you know, to my what would be my wife. So that was, you know, a good twist to the story.
That's awesome. So now let's talk about, you know, your relationship, obviously your high school sweetheart. And bring us back to, like, you know, those high school, college years, and then into as you transition after college. Let's get into this story and the remarkable, just your really remarkable story and God's grace and divine mercy. Let's talk about that for a couple minutes.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, and just, you know, yeah, I try to be as vulnerable as possible, you know, especially with the, you know, at school with the students or any young people, you know, we're talking to. My wife and I do marriage prep, which we really enjoy, you know, so we try our best just to be as normal and relatable as possible. So Trish and I are, you know, regular kids, and we met and fell in love, and, you know, there's tons of pressures in the world, and one of the pressures, obviously, is, you know, when you fall in love or have those strong feelings or emotions for someone, you know, you start engaging in sexual activity, and unfortunately, you know, I didn't have any formation in that area, unfortunately,
sure.
And I don't think Trisha did either. You know, we didn't have, like, the Jason Evert, you know, where you're, like, pulling up YouTube, you know, on your cell phone and watching, you know, like, the Chastity Project or something like that, where you're learning. You know, it's more so, it was more so we were getting the rules, you know, from church, and we weren't getting the reason behind the rules, the whys, the, you know, the love, the Pope John Paul theology of the body, the, you know, it's like,
definitely.
And you know, obviously that all came later, but that's one of the traps that we fell into. And I think one of the major things that I've learned is that, you know, I've learned natural law. I've learned, you know, natural consequence. I think a lot of times we hear the word consequence and we're thinking negative. You know, consequence doesn't have to be negative. It could be anything. It could be, you know, feeding a plant, a tomato plant, putting it in sun, you know, in sun and watering it, giving it food and growing tomatoes. That's a consequence. That's a natural
sure.
consequence of putting it in sun and feeding it. You know, so a natural consequence of our sexuality and engaging in, you know, sexual, you know, activity with someone from the other sex is that you can wind up pregnant. And unfortunately, much easier for me to talk about this now because I have so many times over the years, Joe, but Trisha and I found ourselves at some point in high school in an unplanned pregnancy situation. So, you know, what do we do at that moment? I'm the youngest of four boys. My wife is the oldest of four girls. She was afraid. She didn't think that there was any way that she could tell her parents. I was actually watching this situation lived out in my own life. My brother, Chris, wound up with a high school pregnancy with his girlfriend, Jennifer. And I have to tell you, I have remarkable parents. They're really wonderful people. And they wrapped their arms around that situation just with a spirit of love. And they moved my brother's girlfriend, Jen, into our home with us. I remember I was a junior in high school at the time, and their son Christopher was born, and you know, and I you know, I watched that situation unfolding, and I think at the time, in addition to Trisha's fear, I was afraid also, and I was afraid of putting that on my parents at the time because we were living through that situation with my brother, and then also we live in a society with all these worldly things that is just pressing down on us, teaching us that all of the important things in the world are things, not people. And I didn't realize until later on in life that we're supposed to love people and use things. And unfortunately, the world teaches us the other way. We love things and use people so that we can get what we want. And that's kind of where we were, Jill. I think just to put things simple is that, you know, you don't want to have that teenage pregnancy or college pregnancy and have that baby, because then how are you going to be able to go on with the rest of your life? How are you going to be able to graduate college and get a job and marry your, you know, the love of your life and go get that beautiful house with the white picket fence and have, you know, a dog named Rover and 2.4 children? And, you know, it's almost like it's going to mess up that perfect picture, you know, that everyone has in their mind.
There you are. Like, you're a two sports star, right? You're a standout in both basketball and baseball. And, you know, at that point, you probably have aspirations of playing, you know, college basketball or baseball or both, and you know, that's certainly, you know, that comes to a screeching halt, you know, at this point in time too, I would imagine, no?
That's exactly right. I think that for me, I was had my heart set on playing sports in college, and I think for Trisha, she comes from, you know, a well-educated family, and she, you know, was expected to go on to college, graduate, you know, possibly even do some graduate work, which, you know, which he did. And I think that you're absolutely right. That absolute fear just set in 100%. And we didn't understand, you know, the truth is, Joe, we didn't understand anything about abortion. We just knew at the time that if you were pregnant, you could go to one of these places and that they would quote unquote solve your problem because
sure.
you went in there pregnant. And when you left, you know, you were no longer pregnant, and now your problem's solved, so you can go back on with your regular, you know, problem solved, go on with your regular course of life again.
So that happens, and then, you know, you stay together, you with Trish, and you know, you both go on to college in Philadelphia, different schools, so let's pick up at that point right there.
Yeah, I think that's where the honest-to-goodness trouble started, Joe, for us. You know, looking back and reflecting on it now that's when our relationship, I think, you know, started to become what I would consider to be really, really unhealthy. And I, you know, and we always share with, you know, with married couples when we're teaching pre-Kina, I feel like it's a wonder that we even made it to the altar. I mean, if it weren't for God, I don't know how we made it there. And So at the time, you know, and I could get into as much detail with this as possible, but, you know, being at the Planned Parenthood in Atlantic City, which to this day I still don't even remember where it is, and then the look on Trisha's face, you know, after coming out of there, the fear that I, you know, the panic that I was set in, was something wrong. I didn't know. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm just a 17-year-old kid.
Sure.
And so we wound up coming up here to college. My wife goes to Villanova. We were both raised in, you know, really, really good Catholic, you know, just traditional families, good sets of parents and, you know, and all that. And she comes up to Villanova and I go up to St. Joe's, and and that's when I started to come apart at the seams a little bit. So I wound up fouling things up in high school as far as getting, you know, recruited. And I had a bit of an ego, and I had an attitude problem, you know, and I can own that and admit to it, you know. So since I didn't get recruited for, you know, big time D1, that was like a major, you know, ego blow for me. I thought Division II and Division III was like an insult, so I wasn't going to pursue any of that. And when I came up here, God gave me a second chance, and I wound up having an opportunity to walk on St. Joe's University's basketball team. And if you remember at the time, that was the beginning of the Phil Martelli era, which was 1995, 96. And that year when I didn't walk on the team, I watched them go to the Sweet 16 that year. And and I look back at it now, and I mean, I can laugh at myself for being just such, you know, such an idiot about it, but that was God giving me a second opportunity. So instead, I fell into a life of just partying and, you know, using drugs, and Trish and I wound up with a really awful, just bad relationship, abusive relationship at the time. And, you know, and then I just started to come apart at the seams a little bit, Joe. So my grades, you know, really suffered. And at that point, my dad kind of had to have a come to Jesus meeting with me at the end of my freshman year of college, which was, you know, tough love. It was the most helpful thing he's ever done for me.
Sure. Pete, let me ask you this, and I appreciate your candor, because this is such an amazing, you know, God used both of you in your, you know, in your union. I mean, what you guys endured as a couple, you know, and to weather those storms, and then now seeing God's, you know, abundant grace and Him working through you as a couple and really changing lives of, you know, of all the young people you talk to. You know, how much of that recklessness do you think you could attribute to the woundedness of what happened in high school, and your you know, your inability to reconcile that with your faith and with God? What would you say to that?
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's hard to, you know, to give a percentage, obviously, Joe, but, you know, you're going through the normal young teenage years, and, you know, you're doing things, you're dabbling in things, whatever, but, you know, there's a big difference between dabbling or making some mistakes and then having to check them, you know, versus just completely, you know, derailing off of the tracks. And
sure.
That's what happened to me at that point. Was I'm no longer an excellent AD student. I'm no longer playing sports and excelling. I'm no longer even going to church. At that point, I literally walked away from God and walked away from church, and really started to become bitter and resentful of the things in our Catholic Church and the rules in our Catholic Church. And I mean, I can still remember even now saying at the time, over the course of a few years in college, that, you know, I don't even know why I went to Catholic school. And I, you know, when I get older, I'm not going to even send my children to Catholic school. You know,
sure.
I don't buy into all this. You know, it's like, we're always asking for money. And, you know, like all the typical, you know, bitter rhetoric that we hear,
yeah.
You know, and that was me. I, you know, I will say Trisha had remained faithful and continued going to Mass at Villanova. They have a 10 o'clock Mass, which everyone knows about on Sunday nights. And, you know, she continued going without me, and she, you know, she always maintained that part of her faith. But I completely derailed her. So I'd say, yeah, I mean, more than half of it was me being, you know, me losing, fully losing God in my life and not being able to reconcile any of this. That for sure was I can attribute, you know, more than half of the mess that I went through to that.
Gotcha. Okay, and, so now you're in college. Your father has an intervention, okay, and then to pick us up after the intervention there.
Yeah, my dad just, he exercised a little tough love, and I think that's something that, you know, that's missed. I mean, it's the year of St. Joseph. So what are we looking for is, you know, true, authentic masculinity. And clearly we don't have it, you know. And I know I fight for that on a daily basis as a husband, as a father, as a worker. I go constantly to St. Joseph to ask for more strength so I can do a better job in my calling, my role. And, you know, I had that from my father. He flat out told me at the end of the year, I mean, he handed me a map. My brother and I, he handed us a map. He said, here's a map, and there's a community college. It's called Montgomery County Community College. He said, you're going to want to go and get yourself enrolled for classes because it's probably all you two can afford. And he said, you're going to want to go get a full-time job so that this way you can pay for your classes and your books and all. Joe, at the time, I'm
sitting
there, gosh, are you kidding me? Dad? Where, you know, what's going on? Best thing he ever did for us. So my father taught us an important lesson. He taught us that idle time is the devil's workshop.
No doubt.
I can tell you, I wasn't playing sports anymore, and I wasn't, you know, taking my grades seriously. So now at that point, I had to work full-time to earn money. And when I wasn't working, I was in class or studying and getting my schoolwork done. I mean, I valeted cars like 6 nights a week. My brother and I worked at a Manhattan Bagel even. We ran a Manhattan Bagel in Narberth, Pennsylvania for them, you know, while they were waiting to sell it, you know, as a franchise. So we just, you know, we just worked. And best thing that happened for me, I was able to slowly start getting cleaned up, you know, over time. But there's one thing that didn't change, unfortunately, Joe, and I have to bring that up and share it. My wife and I, you know, we still didn't get through our thick skulls that the only way that you get pregnant is by having sex. And it doesn't matter whether it's protected or not, because it's not 100% effective. So no one had come along and taught us some of the beautiful teachings in the church, like learning how to deny yourself, you know, selfish pleasures and things like that. And, you know, all these other principles, you know, fasting and what that can do for us as Catholics and, you know, and all that. So I wasn't getting any of that because I wasn't even at church to begin with. So, of course, I wasn't learning the beauty of, you know, church teaching because I wasn't even there. I wasn't even present. So, unfortunately, Tricia actually got pregnant again, Joe, when we were, I believe, juniors in college. And, man, that was really, really, this one's bad because we had both agreed at that point. We stayed together and, you know, through college, and we both agreed there is no way in hell, if I can say that, there's no way in hell we're going to go through this awful experience again. So we need to tell our parents. And Tricia was first. She told her mom and dad before I had an opportunity to tell my parents, Joe. And, you know, there's an unfortunate part of that, this story, but it's, you know, I believe that God writes straight on crooked lines, so he wrote straight all over, you know, the crooked part of this story, which is really, really part of the beautiful, you know, part of our redemption also. But for anyone who's not aware, my wife called her parents. I think my parents unfortunately made my in-laws unfortunately thought they were doing the right thing for Tricia at the time, being their oldest daughter. They wanted to see her graduate from Villanova with her nursing degree. They wanted to see her to go on and continue to be successful. They had no idea of the first pregnancy and the first abortion. And they basically gave Tricia a little bit of an ultimatum, which knowing what I know now, is the story of coercion that many, many, you know, fearful pregnant women go through. And is there's all layers of, you know, coercion. I mean, we see it from a professional athlete, you know, literally beating, you know, their girlfriend or fiance or wife when they're pregnant, or, you know, a high profile, you know, attorney or doctor or something like that, you know, all the way down to subtle forms of conversion, which sound something like this. Hey, if you, you know, want to go through with that pregnancy and have a baby, then you're going to have to figure that out with Pete, or you're going to have to figure that out on your own. Or if you want to stay at Villanova and get your degree, we're going to come and pick you up, and we're going to take you to a Planned Parenthood facility and, you know, and get the pregnancy, you know, terminated. So, unfortunately, my wife was trusting in her parents and in her, you know, in their guidance, and she allowed them to come pick her up at Villanova, Joe. And I feel like that really, really crushed me at the time. because it takes two people to make a baby, and unfortunately, I had absolutely no say in this decision whatsoever. And that's the society we live in now. We live in a world where we say things like women's health care and women's choice, and and that word choice. And the truth is, you know, you can't make a baby without sperm and egg. I was the provider of the sperm, and I had not only did I not have 50% say in that decision, I had 0% say in that decision. And I wanted the baby.
After you guys, the healing process, we'll come back to the healing process, but I just have to ask you now, like, when you and Trish begin to heal and start to receive God's divine mercy, was there any animosity with her and her parents, or you and her parents, in terms of laying down that ultimatum to you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. That bitterness and resentment, hatred, animosity, I mean, that literally stayed within me, Joe, all the way up until we got engaged and we were getting married.
Gotcha.
I mean, literally. And I'll share with you, we can talk a little bit more about it, and you ask me, what you'd like, listeners to hear, what you'd like to know, but it was truly, the resentment towards Trisha, even, who I love. I she's the love of my life, so... But the hatred and resentment towards her of how could you do this to me and take this decision out of my hands, our hands, we decided we weren't doing this and you went out and did that anyway. I didn't fully change, until my mom, my brother had cancer. They were both dying from cancer simultaneously. And it was my brother, Mike, who was the initiator in healing my heart.
Wow.
And he was the teacher. He was the instrument so that God could get in there and do the work in my heart that I needed to learn how to love again. And there's no place in a heart for resentment and love at the same time. There's no place in a heart for anger and love. And, the one thing my brother Mike left me with, the main thing he left me with was 1 Corinthians 13. And most are familiar with that one. It's love is patient, love is kind. And at the end of that one, verse 13 is, faith, hope, and love, the greatest of all these being love. And that's what he left me with. And I was able to start to learn the four Greek loves and learn agape. And that's where that healing, began for me to start to rekindle this with Trisha again.
And no such thing as a coincidence, because, your oldest son, Petey, was born on your brother Mike's birthday. How awesome is that?
No coincidence at all. I mean, if you know Italian families, they have to get together for Sunday night dinner no matter what.
Sure.
Like, doesn't matter how old everybody is or where you are, you have to come to mom and dad for Sunday night dinner. And Trisha and I are still dating at the time. We're dating for more than 10 years. She's waiting for me to propose to her. And I had just given her diamond earrings for Christmas, and I didn't realize that was a problem. I thought it was a nice gift.
Wrong diamond
box, thinking there's an engagement ring in there, and your dumb boyfriend gives you a diamond earrings. That's what Trisha was looking for. So we're at my parents. I'm sitting out in the other room with my brother Mike. He has one eye. He has 11 tumors in his head. He's really losing his battle with cancer, and he looks at me with my one eye, and it was like he looked right into my soul, Joe. And he said, my family calls me Petey, and he said, Petey, what are you doing? And I said, what do you mean, Mikey? And he said, you love her, don't you? And I said, yeah, of course I love her. Why? And he said, well, why don't you give her a ring already? And Joe, I'm staring at my brother with one eye, 11 tumors in his head, his wife in the other room, his two small children, that are 4 and 2 years old at the time. And I'm staring at him knowing he might not even be here in a few more months. And this guy gets it, and I don't get it. I'm still holding on to everything that I've been holding on to, for all these years, and I can't let it go. And I said to myself, I gotta let it go. So that's what prompted it. I went down and bought an engagement ring for Trisha, and just started asking God, I need you to heal my heart. I need you to help me to learn how to love again. I need you to make this pure and innocent, like when we were younger, before we got into all this mess. I need you to restore that for me, please. And man, you ask God for something, and and he answers. So So
no doubt, he never disappoints. I know that.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this, ladies and gentlemen. Pete DeMaio and his amazing story of God's divine mercy. We'll be back after a short break.
Hello, Father DeLacy here, and I owe a great debt of gratitude to the In His Sign radio ministry. It was this radio ministry that I listened to when I was going from being a lukewarm Catholic to an engaged Catholic, and this ministry really majorly affected the Catholic that I am today. Kathleen McCarthy in particular has an uncanny ability to speak to the heart, and when she speaks to the heart, she speaks with God's love, with His grace, and with His mercy. I can honestly say that I am a better Catholic, a better man of God, and have experienced the healing and joy of the gospel because of the great ministry of Kathleen McCarthy. And so I encourage others to listen to her so that they can experience the beautiful work that God does through her beautiful words.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We are blessed to have had this Catholic radio apostolate for almost 40 years now. Thanks be to God for your partnership. Without you, this radio voice would be silenced. We have a monthly Mass offered for you, our loyal family of listeners. It's our way of saying thank you for underpinning our apostolate with your many prayers and financial support. This is your radio ministry, to be a voice for those who have no voice, to evangelize and to catechize for a time such as this. We know the Lord will bless you abundantly. He can never be outdone in generosity. If this ministry has touched your heart, help us to touch other hearts by supporting us with your prayers and financial support. Call us at 610-527-2906 or visit our website at inhissign.com.
Hello and welcome back to Souls on Fire. I'm your host, Joe Trainer, along with Pete DeMaio, and our topic today is living the gospel of life. So, Pete, I know you and I talked earlier this weekend, and we were talking about, you know, the individual healing that takes place in your story, and the healing that takes place as a couple. So, I really never considered something like that, but talk about that. And you're basically, you know, you kind of reconciling, you know, some of your experiences with Christ and your wife doing it, you know, in her time and her own, you know, personal relationship. And then there's the healing as a couple. Talk about the healing as a couple that you guys were blessed with.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. So I think where it all begins, honestly, is number one is just fully emptying out and allowing God to, you know, to come in. We all have all of this humanness and this brokenness inside of us. So I think, you know, one of the main verses that sticks out to me in the Bible is Galatians 2:20, and Father Larry Richards, you know, references that often. It's, you know,
sure.
I know you're familiar. That's the one where, you know, I now am, and, you know, basically emptying it out, and what Christ is now going to live in me. So, you know, that's what happened, but how does that happen? And I truly feel like my brother had to die in order for me to fully gain God back in my life, because it was almost like I was just too selfish and stubborn that if God let me off the hook and let my brother live, I would have got what I wanted. so I wouldn't have had to fully turn it over to him. You know what I mean? I could have done like an 80% Galatians 2.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I could have just kind of let him in there, but I'm not going to fully let him in, you know? But I had already done that. I had already been like a ordinary Catholic, you know, lukewarm Catholic, cafeteria Catholic my entire life. So it's like, you know, so this time it was over. It was, you know, I'm not doing that anymore. So what followed was a good friend of ours, John O'Rourke, took my father on retreat out to Malvern, Men of Malvern, Knights of the Immaculata. My father, after going through some of his healing, after losing his son, you know, to cancer and almost losing his wife at the same time, brings my brother Chris and I the following year. And, you know, a couple of really, really important things happened for me, Joe. Number one, there is no healing without the sacrament of confession. And I don't mean to lay it down, you know, like that, you know, harshly for someone who doesn't understand our sacraments, you know, exactly what they are and what they mean. But sure, those, you know, those of us who are Catholic and raised in the faith, I mean, that is the, you know, the external sign of the internal mystery. And that's that for me, going to confession with Father James McCurry at that Knights of the Immaculata retreat and me just pouring it all out. I mean, just dumping my heart out after 10 years, you know, of not being in church or in the sacrament of confession. That was the greatest thing that ever happened. I came home. You know, you hear stories of people, you know, the Holy Spirit coming upon people. Some people are just completely breaking down, you know, in tears and emotional. And I came home and blabbed like an idiot to Tricia. And I said, you know, oh my gosh, honey, I said, I confessed everything. She said, everything? I said, yeah, everything. I said, you got to go too. I feel so much better now. I was like, it's almost like I got this weight off of my back that we've been carrying around all these years. I said, I need you to go. There's no way that we can go to the next level together if you're still, you know, dragging, you know, or have anything hanging on you. I need you to go too. So I brought Trish, and she ultimately went to confession also. Hers wound up being a funny one. She wound up having to go face to face just coincidentally. It's just what happened at the time. And one of the other beautiful things that happened was I never knew the teaching, you know, about contraceptives. I never knew the science behind it and medically how it wasn't healthy for women, you know, to take the contraceptive pill.
Sure.
I never knew about any of the studies behind it. I never knew, you know, none about the encyclical Humanae Vitae, which came out in the 60s by Pope Paul VI. And I didn't know any of these things, Joe. So anyway, I came home and I felt like I was finally starting to love Trisha properly and purely. I said to her while I was babbling like an idiot, I said, honey, did you know how bad the contraceptive pill is for you? And she said, yes, of course I do. I'm a nurse. I know what the problems are. And I said, okay, well, you can't take it anymore. I said, I love you. I only have one of you. You're not replaceable. I said, I lost my brother. I don't want to lose you. I said, I don't care if it's a 0.0001% chance. It's not worth it. You can't take it anymore. And she stopped taking the pill, and a month later, she was pregnant. And as you said, one of the most beautiful parts of our story was not only does God bless us with our first child, but he proves to us that by going to him and relinquishing all over to him again and the healing power of the sacrament of confession, he gives us our oldest son, and he's born on my brother Mike's birthday, who had just passed away 2 years prior from cancer. If Mike doesn't pass away, as I said, I don't turn my life over to God. I don't go on that retreat.
Sure.
I don't go to confession. And now here we are with this beautiful little boy. Greatest gift for me, greatest gift for us in our marriage, greatest, you know, to continue that journey of healing, and wonderful gift for my family also, having just lost my brother.
Absolutely. That miracle never gets old.
No. No, and it continued after that, Joe. I mean, it's just like, sometimes it's weird the way God shows up in my life all the time.
Absolutely. So now, let me ask you this, Pete. This is an amazing story on so many levels, but to me, where God really works here is, you know, like, how do you guys decide as a couple? I mean, when I first was introduced to you through Joe Aquilante a couple months ago, you know, you said, yeah, you can search us. We're the Philly abortion couple. Like, where do you draw the strength? And talk us about, you know, when you're now going to use your pain and suffering And now, what? Talk about how God calls you to share that story, in helping others heal, and certainly from a preventative standpoint. Doing all the tremendous work you're doing as a crazy in demand speaker for chastity and teenage sex and abstination. Talk about how God, how you guys come to the conclusion to say, hey, we're going to now, as the healing is taking place, we're going to now share our story with others.
Yeah. Thanks for asking me, Jamie. And again, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share
Absolutely.
This. And Trisha and I, it was simple. Not everyone is as lucky and blessed as we are. There's a lot of people out there that are damaged and hurt from this, and they're going at it alone. They don't have the benefit that Trish and I have, but they can experience the same level of healing and redemption. They just might not be able to do it with that same partner, same mate. But Trish and I have the benefit of being able to talk through all this with each other. So not only are we being healed, but we're being healed together as a couple with each other, as you pointed out. So Trish and I identified that if there's two things that we could do, go back in time and change. Like, what caused all this? How did we come off the tracks? And what we identified is the two things that we would absolutely change is we wouldn't have sex before we got married, and we would save that for each other, because what we came to learn in the beauty of the teaching of chastity is it's not about, as Jason Evert says, I'm just borrowing this from him, it's not about following the rules so that you don't go to hell. It's about loving the other person so much and wanting heaven for the person that you love so much that you're willing to make that sacrifice for them, and you want the best for them. You're wishing it well on them. You know what I mean? So you don't need to use
Sure.
them for some sort of physical or selfish pleasure. And so that was the one thing. The second thing that Trish and I realized is we live in a culture now where so many couples cohabitate, before they get married. And if you look at the divorce rates among couples, we're at all-time highs of 50% divorce rates. But for those couples that are cohabitating before marriage, those rates can be as high as two-thirds or 70%.
Sure.
Trish and I are walking up on the altar, Joe, knowing that we have like a 70% chance that we're not going to make it in marriage. And you could, put the two abortions on top of that. I don't know what the percentage is, but we barely stand a chance at that point. It's like, one out of 10 or two out of 10. So
that's what's like truly like to me. And as I'm thinking about all these, there's so many layers to your beautiful story, right? There, the fact that God keeps you united through all this pain and suffering, and then gives you the strength to now share that pain and suffering with other people and try and inspire your platform to reach people is just it's infinite. I mean, you're talking to post-abortive couples that that have years of shame and guilt, and you're bringing them back to Christ, and then you're engaging young people in terms of like, hey, self-denial and delay gratification and treating your body like sure. I mean, there's so many people that you're reaching, and that's what makes this story, in my opinion, one of the greatest I've ever heard, and in my opinion, one of the greatest that's being told. And I don't believe in prosperity gospel, Pete. I think it's you listen to some of those evangelists and you talk about not mentioning any names, but hey, if you put your trust in the Lord, you're going to make a ton of money and life is going to now be great. But I will say this, like, I think God's use of you, and you and your wife being open to the Holy Spirit. So now, like, fast forward, I don't want to run out of time because this is really such a big part of the story. So there you are, you the healing's beginning, you're starting a family, and now we're fast forward, it's 2012, and you guys are on the brink of declaring bankruptcy, right? So it's like it's like Job, it's like one one bad storm after another. So fast forward to that, because I'd be remiss if we didn't get to that aspect of the story, because you mentioned it earlier about trust, right? And you know, I know in my life, most of the time, you know, when someone asks me, do I trust in the Lord? I say, yeah, about 90%, right? And then I try and screw them up with the other 10%, you know, and try and dictate, you know, times and dates and places where I want him to intervene for me. And I think you're, you know, as a family, you know, you and Tricia, like you're just your unconditional trust in God, you know, after weathering storm after storm. Bring us up to 2012 and where you guys are as a couple and a young family.
Yeah, I think like you said, Joe, there's a lot there too. And I know exactly what you're talking about because, you know, depending on what channel you turn on or what podcast you're listening to, you're going to hear a lot of what I forget the term you just used, but a lot of like, hey, just, you know, believe in God and your next tidal wave of blessings is coming. It's already on its way, you know? And,
sure.
And, you know, and Trish and I, you know, we chuckle, we laugh sometimes because we say, yeah, that's true, because look how much God has blessed us. But not like that, not in that way, because sometimes what it means to be a Christian is it means we're actually going to pick up the cross and we're going to help carry it with Jesus. And we don't need a tidal wave of blessings to follow him. You know what I mean? It's not a matter of believing in him, as Father Mike Schmidt says. It's a matter of following him. And following him sometimes means we're actually going to struggle. You know, we're going to carry the cross with him. And I feel like that's something that God put us to the test again, in a very difficult way, but in a very practical and deep, profound way. So before getting up to that point, the one thing that he did for me is he caused a relocation for me in my career. And in 2005, I got relocated out to Arizona, and I was out there and working for this company, and I was going to get promoted, you know, again, and, you know, would have been doing very well financially. But for the first time ever while I was out there, I read the Gospels, Joe. I'm embarrassed to say that, but as a Catholic, sometimes we forget to sit down and read our Bible.
We
can learn a lot of fervor, you know, gain a lot of fervor from our, you know, like our Protestant or non-denominational brothers and sisters, you know, that are very deep in their Bible. And so I'm out there, and it doesn't take much. It's just one chapter a day or 15 minutes a day and just being alone in the classroom of silence, you know, as Matthew Kelly says, and just, you know, listening. Two ears, one mouth, and listen to God, let him speak to you in your mind and your heart. That, for me, was absolutely life-altering. Me reading the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, for the first time ever out there in Arizona, that changed everything for me. That was the game changer, because now I know how God wants me to live my life. He wants me to live it exactly what it says right here, you know, and that for me was the difference, Joe. So as we get forward in the next years, or 6 or 7 or 8, you know, starting our own business, our own insurance agency, having a disagreement, you know, with the company we work for, having to change companies, you know, and all that. I mean, I opened up a business, and then before I know it, I'm opening another one, you know, with a new company. And then I have a partnership issue that goes awry, and I'm opening up a third agency now, scratch. As you had said, that was 2010 I opened this agency, and in 2012, Tricia and I are facing the worst financial hardship that we have faced all along. It was so bad that we literally were facing bankruptcy. We had lost our home in Arizona. We had lost our first home that we had purchased here when we were first married, that we had been renting out. We had worked very, very hard in our 20s as, you know, as a couple, and tried to, you know, do the things that the world tells you to do, you know, save for retirement,
sure,
accumulate, you know, property or wealth or whatever. We were trying to do the right financial principles. And, you know, God came along again. He said, no, I don't think so. Not your way, my way. And he just, like you said, it really feels like the story of Job. He just took everything away. Well, interestingly enough, simultaneously while this is going on, he introduces me to someone who had a failed business partnership with his brother. And
okay,
the business partnership with his brothers failed to the point where they were coming to blows in their parking lot, you know, and police were called.
Wow.
And they dissolved their business partnership as brothers. Well, I'm, you know, considering what we're, you know, in, and I actually had a pastor tell me that I should possibly sue my own brother, you know, as we were, you know, splitting up our partnership.
your brother. It's not your blood, but it's mine. And my sister-in-law isn't either of our blood. So you know, neither of us can feel that, you know, that compelling love towards her. But we do. Why? You know, because she's our sister-in-law. So I said, none of this is adding up right now. And I said, I think that we just need to, you know, to hang in there and just all do our best. And that's what we did as a family. We hung in there with each other and we did our best. And, you know, was it difficult? Yeah, it was difficult. We literally lost our homes and we almost lost the home we were living in. And we had to go meet with bankruptcy attorneys, Joe, you know, to figure out what we were supposed to do next. I mean, we got help from our Catholic school to keep our children in school that year. My parents had to kick in and help us just to keep health insurance. You know, I mean, we got a tremendous amount of help from our parents, but, you know, babysitting our children while we're both going to work. But, man, something beautiful happened. And at that point, our fourth child was born. Our fifth child was then born. And Trisha said to me, honey, I'm supposed to be going back to work, you know, when I hit that 12-week mark after Vincenzo was born. I said, honey, honestly, we are in so much financial turmoil that I hate to say this, but you going back to work isn't even going to help us anymore. I said, literally, it's that bad where you going to work won't help. I said, let's just stop. I said, let's just stop doing it the way we've been doing it. Let's get off the hamster wheel and let's maybe do this differently and see if God has a message in here for us. So we did, Joe, and it wound up being the most beautiful thing ever for us. Trisha stopped working. That was difficult for her. She had to clean out her locker at Penn Presbyterian Hospital, which she had been working at, you know, for 15 years since she graduated. We told my, you know, my in-laws and, you know, my mom and dad that we, you know, didn't need help with the kids. We stopped, you know, borrowing money from my parents. They were helping us, as I said, you know, financially. And we started going to adoration, which we hadn't ever gone to adoration on a weekly basis before. And we just started sitting in front of Jesus in the Eucharist on Mondays. You know, we would take turns going, because don't forget, we have five small children at this point that are, you know, like 6 or 7 years old and under. And we just, you know, I would go to adoration, and then I'd run home, and Trisha would go for 15, 20 minutes. Sometimes we would take a couple of the older children with us so they could sit. And my gosh, Joe, it wound up being, you know, wound up being beautiful. Not, you know, the rest of the story is amazing, actually. We're more blessed than we would ever deserve to be.
That truly is amazing. And I think, you know, and I've talked to a couple guests about this before, you know, the beauty of Catholicism is we have so many gifts of worship from God, right? You were talking earlier about the sacramental gift of confession, and some of us are drawn to adoration, the novena, Stations of the Cross, the Rosary, like there's saintly intercessions. Like, it's so, you know, we're so blessed with so many different avenues that, you know, that God provides for us. And that's, you know, and obviously, you know, it's pretty cool that you and your wife, among, I can't even imagine the chaos in the family of five, soon to, you know, later to be seven, but like, you know, there you are. It's like you're passing off the baton at the track meet. Like, you know, you're pulling in the driveway, after adoration, and your wife's leaving the house, and she's going to adoration. That's a pretty awesome story. And I think, you know, and then God, you know, obviously, not that you were looking for the prosperity, but, you know, God has gifted you with abundance that you're now sharing and spreading and paying it forward. Which is really awesome, Pete. Honestly, I mean, I don't say this. You know, I sound like, I know I'm probably using hyperbole here, but this is one of the most powerful stories I've heard in the last 20 years, and it's so inspirational, because I think in all of our brokenness, right, there's shame, you know, and then, you know, we hide in the darkness because we're shameful, and then, you know, your ability, God's ability to work the Spirit through you and your wife. And you to transform other lives, and then because you trust in God, He blesses you abundantly in all areas. Now, I'm not even talking financially, just with seven beautiful kids and a beautiful family and a beautiful, you know, and a healthy, vibrant, successful career. It's pretty awesome. I do want to talk for a minute or two as we're winding up the hour here, Pete. You know, we don't like try and stay above politics. I don't, I don't want to get into that, you know, because it's so divisive. But, you know, under the umbrella of Catholicism, right, you have a lot of different lanes, and, you know, the dividers, you know, in my opinion, or, you know, you have the issue of life, you have, you know, capitalism versus socialism, you know, immigration, you know, military, police. There's a couple, you know, hot button topics out there within the faith. And, you know, when I feel, and again, I've only lived in these 53 of the greatest, strongest, you know, most bountiful church in the history of humanity, you know, the Catholic Church is 2,000 plus years. But it just seems like we're such a fractured group here. And, you know, under the umbrella of Catholicism, you know, what do you say to pro-choice, pro-abortion Catholics out there? Is it possible to still be united in our Catholic faith, or do you see a schism or a break coming, or is the mindset, hey, we've had turmoil and corruption and scandal in the church, you know, for 2,000 years, and we've survived our own sinfulness, and this is just another part of that? Or what is your take on the Catholic Church moving forward in a kind of a divisive time period right now?
I hope we don't have a break or a schism, Joe, and it's possible it is, and I hope we don't. We pray that we don't. I don't have any judgment toward. I try not to, at least, to have any judgment towards, you know, towards anyone or the decisions that they make or the beliefs that they have. I always just look at it like it's either being uninformed, you know, or misinformed, or, you know, lack of formation. And where does the formation come from? It comes from God. It comes from, you know, the Blessed Mother. It comes from, you know, from Jesus.
It comes from your brother Mike.
And, you know? Yeah, where can that lack of formation exist? Oh, my gosh, it can exist in all human hearts. I mean, no one is exempt from that. It doesn't matter whether you're a nun, a deacon, a priest, a bishop. You could be the Pope. The Pope is a bishop. So, you know, that no one is exempt from that. And I know from my own life and my own story. But what I do is I come back to the, you know, to the Bible or to the Gospels. And just in John 2, a couple Sundays ago, I had the privilege of reading down at the cathedral. And in the second reading, John 2, John, my gosh, he was really strong in his words. He says, you know, if you're not, you know, living out, well, it's Jesus' words, but if you aren't living out my, you know, the commandments, you're a liar, he says. You're a liar. And I think that our commandments are pretty clear and they're pretty cut and dry. So, yeah, do we have, you know, difference of opinion and things like that? Yeah, but they're, you know, that's our humanness. That's our brokenness. If we would just empty ourselves out and let, you know, more Jesus, less whatever, less politics, less opinions, less whatever, we wouldn't have this right now, because the Ten Commandments are crystal clear. God asks us to follow them. And then Jesus comes and gives the most beautiful commandment on top of that and says, love one another as I have loved you. And how does he love us? He gives us everything. He lays his entire life down for us, and he gives us his body and blood. So there is no greater love than that. And I think that's the part that we're all missing sometimes, Joe, is we're not laying our lives down for others. We're, you know, and that's where we miss the mark.
Absolutely. Great advice right there. Pete, I want to ask you if there's any educators out there or CCD teachers or anybody that's dealing with young people, you know, if they're interested in getting you as a presenter for, you know, one of your Sanctity of Life speaking engagements, what would the best way to contact you be?
Oh, yeah, please do. No formal contact yet with website or anything like that. Feel free to call my cell phone. 610-972-8019, 610-972-8019. You can even email us at DeMaio, which is DEMAIO, T, the letter T, like Trisha, number8@gmail.com. That's DeMaio, T8@gmail.com. And, I'd be more than happy to. More often than not, Joe, I do this for free because I don't want anything other than just, I'm so thankful that God came and grabbed a hold of me and pulled me out of the depths of where I was, that I just want to try and bring more, you know, more people. And I don't mean to sound cliche, but I just want to bring more souls to him. I know that that's where everything lies. We have so many people in need of healing right now for various reasons that I just want everyone to experience what Trish and I experienced over, you know, over these last 15 years.
God bless. Hey, God bless you and Trisha. You're doing God's work, Pete, and you were a pipe-swinging disciple of Christ. I thank you for that, man. All right, my friend. We'll talk soon.
You too. Thank you so much, Joe.
All right, buddy.
God bless. Bye.
You too. I'm a soul.